Territory Podcast. For this episode, we invited Cezanne Reddy to the show to introduce us to this new concept called cybersecure storage. Welcome back to the show, Cezanne.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Duncan. Good to be here.
Hey, you were on the show in episode 2, and I'm hoping that the majority of listeners actually listen to the episode. If you haven't yet, make sure you go back and listen to the episode with Cezanne. But for those who want to jump right into it, maybe you can introduce yourself, explain what you do at VMware, and maybe also explain what you did before VMware.
So, currently, I have a role of a CTO for the cloud storage and data products. So my job is to work with the team and work with customers and the team, all of the the storage team as well as the broader VMware team, to kind of construct strategies and products so that we can help our customers manage their growing amount of data in different forms of it. That's kind of my current role. And before that, my company was called Datrium. And we kind of built a cloud-based disaster recovery solution with VMware Cloud. And that was like a private company, a Silicon Valley company. So we were acquired by VMware 3 years ago. And that product is now called VCDR, VMware Cloud Disaster Recovery, with ransomware recovery as well. And just before that, one of the other companies I worked for, which is a popular company, is Data Domain, which is a backup product. We kind of invented dedupe, and it's a very popular product in the marketplace. It still is a very popular product. It's still, I think, number one backup in terms of revenue product, I think, in the marketplace. So long history. I've been in many startups companies. I've been in 6 startup companies. And so broad experience in different things. So generally excited to be at VMware.
Awesome. Yeah, and I was actually one of those customers for Data Domain back in the day. Now, today we're going to talk about something different, which is something that you actually introduced at Explore together with Vijay, and it's a new concept called cybersecure storage. Now, before we dive into some of the specifics, it's probably good to explain why you and the team are exploring this space. What is interesting for not just us as a company, but also for our customers?
So there are 2-3 aspects of the cybersecure storage, just the idea, the theme itself. The amount of data is growing every day. So, and also data has a life cycle. There are jobs to be done for different parts of the life cycle, like including primary storage. You got to replicate DR for ransomware recovery, for archiving, for compliance, all these different things. And it's a journey customers have to follow through. So that's one thing we wanted to simplify. Think about that stuff. But also increasingly what's happening is that as ransomware attacks are increasing everywhere and globally, the thing they attack is, yes, they steal your password, they steal your credentials, all that stuff. But ultimately, they're attacking your data. That's where they're going to attack. That's where they're going to encrypt the data. And that's where they're going to ask for ransom. So increasingly, the recovery mechanisms and the target of all this ransomware stuff is the data. So it's important that as we construct our products and our features and solve this data lifecycle problem, that we consider fundamental building block of cyber recovery into the products itself. So it's a building block. It's like it has to be part of the system, can't be like a bolt-on. We're trying to make it as a part of the the architecture itself. That's why we feel it's important. This ransomware is not going away. It's a forever problem. And the more, and I think we are a VMware cloud vendor. We sell to a lot of customers. So the more we need to think about this as a more strategic problem. It's not a VMware problem generally, but we should help our customers. It's also a society problem. So together we have to solve this problem. So we are really want to take this on, head on.
We actually spoke about ransomware during the last episode, and we had an episode with someone from Carbon Black actually discussing the ransomware problem. Now, one of the things that's probably also interesting to understand is if customers end up in a situation where their environment was actually breached by some kind of ransomware, how do they actually recover today? What does that look like?
So I've been traveling the world, talking to a lot of customers across the globe to see what they're doing and what is their thought process. The common theme I hear from at least a large segment of customers is that they have immutable backups. The word immutable backups is there. So unfortunately, that word has been misrepresented by a lot of vendors, what it means. What it really means is that your backups are in a safe place and they're locked down, that other somebody else can't just attack you and delete your backups. Sounds, which is important, it's a necessary step because you need to recover from your backups, right? But the challenge is that that is not sufficient. What do you do with these backups once you have them? Because to recover, the next thing we ask customers, what do they do next? I think that's kind of where there is a little bit of loss of continuity in the discussion, because they're like, okay, they feel like it's a magic bullet, but it's not. Because I'll tell you a simple example. The moment you bring up your workloads, backup workloads, let's say you go back in time in 2 weeks and say, okay, let me bring it up. Ransomware is still there. It'll reinfect your environment. And then that's problem number one. Problem number two is how do you cleanse these backups to remove all this stuff? Immutability does not mean your backups are clean. It just means that they can't be deleted. Somebody needs to have the process to clean these VMs. And they're all doing this very manually. It's a very manual runbooks, many manual construction of the process, and they're trying to do their best. But I think, unfortunately, it is not sufficient. So you need to think about this in a holistic way. Immutable backups is not enough. You got to think beyond that. Cleansing, isolation, how do you recover fast? How do you try experimentation? Because you don't know exactly which backups are good and bad. So you need all these different variety of steps and process to follow through to get there. And this is, I think, where some are really good. I found like at least 5% of customers have thought through all of this stuff, and they've done a lot of good, put product processes in place. But most other customers are like not aware of like what the details are, right? Until they hit them, and then they'll realize the details.
Yeah, I think it's good to point out that some customers actually do have those right procedures in place, and some may not. Now, it's probably also good to understand in those situations, now you already mentioned some of the problems that they may be facing, but it probably also means that from a time to recover, that's also probably quite long. So what are we talking about? Are we talking about, for those customers, minutes, hours, days, weeks? What are we looking at in average?
Yeah, in fact, I'll give an example. 2 months ago, a hospital in Chicago shut down because they could not recover from their ransomware attacks. I mean, they're just like crazy because they couldn't recover from their stuff. So it's turning out to be a spectrum. I think it's turning out to be days and weeks sometimes. So the ransomware folks are depending on the following strategy. They attack you. They know your ROI model. They know how much money you can pay. Let's say your hospital. They know you make like $10 million a day or something like that as a revenue. They only ask for like $2-3 million. And then the question then is that for the CEO of the business or like for the team, like how do they, should they just pay up and move on because the whole day is down? They're depending on you taking too long to recover. So the recovery procedures are very like, you know, people are constructing on the fly how to recover. So it's a very manual process. It's a very discovery oriented process. And suddenly you have to become expert in this topic, right? So it's taking days, sometimes weeks, sometimes never. You can't recover. So they're banking on that problem that it'll take you too long a time and you lose your money to just pay up and move on. So basically, that is where the problems are. So as a strategy for the entire global industry, as a customers, is that either we recover fast or we could just pay up. Those are the two options we're dealing with.
Yeah, as I mentioned, at Explore, you introduced the concept of cyber secure storage. And one of the things that you're actually talking about was the cyber recovery vault. That's probably a good point to begin. Maybe you can explain what it is and how it would help customers.
So firstly, we have vSAN ESA, which is a new architecture we built. We're calling it a multi-purpose architecture. What it means is that we can use it for different kinds of use cases, right? And one of the use cases is that if you're going to have a lot of data, you need a way to kind of store your backups and your copies of data in a place which is immutable, okay, must have. But also you need something which is kind of helps you consolidate all the backups into one place and be resilient to attacks and also be able to recover fast and be able to like cleanse the VMs and build it do it in a way which is basically doesn't reinfect your environment in a quarantined way. All of those things require a set of tools and process and workflows. And that is what we're calling a cyber recovery vault. And that's what we are hoping that every company can then have this opportunity to kind of get this product and be able to be somewhat confident that it's going to help them recover fast with all the cleaning tools and all the processes we have automated fully into it. So that is the goal of that cyber recovery vault. We are in a state where we need this, and we're tackling this problem head on.
Now, when I was listening to the session, one of the things that stood out to me is that there was a part of the session that mentioned something called an intelligent assistant. And I think it's probably, you know, the key component of the whole solution itself. So it's probably good to explain what it is and how it will help you recover.
So one of my favorite companies is ServiceNow. I know I work at VMware, but it's because I don't have any stock in them, no. But it's because they have constructed a kind of workflows for customers for various things they do. It's a very popular kind of tool people use. So because, see, we all have jobs to do, and what you need is a workflows to help you kind of do those jobs. So similarly, for ransomware recovery, it's a complex process. You have to kind of set up an environment which is isolated. You have to quarantine. You have to try experimentation. You have to bring up the VMs. You have to clean the VMs. You have to figure out what the problems are. All of these things are very complex processes. And also, there's a lot of AI. Kind of, you need AI to actually fight some of these things now because ransomware has changed in how it does. How it's now become signatureless. So you need to kind of analyze behavior. So we have to use AI to find the behavior patterns, what it's trying to do, and kind of cleanse them. So we fight AI with AI. So we need a kind of a workflow to go through those steps. Either do it manually or we fully automate this whole process. And then think of it like a copilot, right? So if you look at GitHub as a copilot, you can say, look, I'm looking for, you can put a comment saying, hey, I'm looking for a function which does compound interest, like a bank, compound interest. It'll find something and give it to you. But ultimately, you still have to look at it. You still have to kind of say, yes, this looks good to me because it's suggesting something, but you know, you have to kind of make the steps. So we have automated a lot of things in this ransomware recovery workflows. This is what we call an intelligent assistant, but it still needs some human input occasionally because the other example I give you is the following. If you drive one day in the future, we will have automated self-driving cars on the highways because we figured out everything. The lanes are not changing. It's great. But in ransomware, the lanes are changing every day. The input is changing. They are getting sophisticated. So we can do 90% of the job, but still need 10% of human input to actually take the next steps. Like, hey, we can suggest these things, but it still needs the human intelligence to actually take the next step. So we automated all the mundane stuff, all the complex stuff, but we require human intelligence to where actually they can actually make a big decision on how to do the next steps. This is what we mean by intelligent assistant. It's an assistant. It does a lot of work, but it does still require human input at strategic points in the workflows.
That sounds a lot better than Microsoft Clippy, I guess, which was also an intelligent assistant, but not as intelligent as most people hoped.
Clippy was trying to imagine what you wanted. So this is different. This is different than the Clippy version. Clippy is trying to think, anticipate your future, but this is not that. This is just it's a recovery process asking you to help along the way. So it's not Clippy. I don't use Clippy as a word. I'd rather prefer GitHub Copilot as a word, as comparison.
Now, one of the things you mentioned is the snapshot capability, and you've also mentioned vSAN ESA. Are we taking advantage of those snapshots that are part of vSAN ESA?
Yes. So just from a historical perspective, storage industry generally, if you don't, the architecture is like a database schema, right? If you don't have built-in snapshots fundamentally built into the native architecture, it's hard to do it later on. So the OSA was a little challenging all these years to kind of do that. So the ESA architecture has been redesigned to have this very fine-grained object-level snapshots, like lower level, like, you know, basically VMDKs, VMX files, like those kind of things. We can snapshot anything we want at the lower level. But that's not enough because customers want to manage data at a higher level, their applications. So if you just give them a CLI, tool, APIs to do this lower-level stuff, it's not enough. So what we are doing is that we are constructing a higher level database mechanism to bring all the relationships together. You can group, it's also just constructs what the VM is. But if you have thousands of VMs, it's also then hard to just click on every VM to set policies. So we have a grouping policies to actually help customers group, dynamically group VMs into buckets of protection groups, some grouping, and apply policies on them. So there is this extra work we're doing on top of the basic snapshot foundations in the ESA. But we need this higher level logic as well to actually help with the higher level workflows and policies.
Now, one of the things that also stood out to me while I was listening to the session is when you spoke about cybersecure storage and I was looking at the diagram, it actually mentions VCDR, so our VMware DR as a service-based solution, which runs in VMware Cloud and AWS. Is it fully based on that solution? And then this follow-up question would be, are we also planning on making this available on-prem only?
So two questions, right? First is that, okay, firstly, vSAN has snapshots. So think of them as local snapshots, like look for local recovery, operational recovery. But you also need a quarantine environment to recover your from ransomware attacks, right? The common problem is that people have a fat finger, deleted VM. Okay, you can go back to your snapshots, locally operation recovery. That's great. But ransomware recovery, you need the data to be some other place. And also for DR, you need the database some other place. And since you know we provide a very convenient way of doing this with VCDR, there's data in the cloud, immutable snapshots, and we have all these intelligent workflows built around it to do ransomware recovery with a quarantined environment. So for 1.0 cybersecurity storage, we felt that was a good kind of a stepping stone to where we want to be in having local snapshots, cloud snapshots, and you can use them to recover for ransomware recovery in the cloud. And then we also kind of have some optimizations to kind of recover faster back to the on-prem, onto your local systems. So the second question is that, are we going to bring this to on-prem? Yes. So we have deep thoughts on this topic. We have been, can't share more. It's a VMware, you know the rules that we can't share the future kind of. But I think definitely it's a topic which comes up a lot because there are customers who have sovereign cloud. Customers don't want data in, you know, to escape somewhere else. So there are some, you know, there are highly regulated industries as well who would like to have the data recovery be on site. So there's some difficulty and costs as well associated with that because seeing the cloud, you can automatically deploy resources when you want to. But that's a little different. And if you're going to do it on-prem, then you got to have resources always there. So there are some of these things we are discussing with customers saying, what is the best way for us to do this? So we do plan to bring our ransomware recovery, you know, in all this intelligent assistant workflows to all data, wherever VMware is. That's our goal.
I'm guessing it's a good way to start as well. And as long as we control everything end to end, it's probably easiest to do updates, etc. So I could see why we are doing that and then potentially move to on-prem at some point in time. I think that is definitely something that aligns with our customers. Now, the 1.0 version, I think probably good to understand as well. Does that actually require an SDDC up and running, or can we just replicate to the cloud and then spin it up when we need it? How does that actually work?
Okay. Firstly, when somebody has ESA locally and has the snapshots enabled or the local policies, it's an optional add-on feature, add-on service to get this VCDR in the Amazon cloud. And the way it works is that in steady state, you don't need to have a lot of compute servers because it's just doing backups into the cloud and it's saving them in an immutable way. So it's kind of cheap and deep, like, you know, in cost-effective way of doing this stuff. But when you do have a disaster recovery or a ransomware attack problem, the system VCDR is capable of automatically launching a provisioning new cloud, VMware cloud servers, and so that you can immediately bring up your workloads. So you don't have to pay for this compute SDDC all the time. You have a choice if you want to. If you want to have it always ready on, okay, that's, you can also have a pilot light, like just two hosts. There are many options we have. One of the options is that you don't need to have that. And it'll take a little longer to bring up the servers. The RTO time will be a little longer, but not every workload needs this RTO to be like zero. So you can choose how you want to do this. So we give the flexibility for the customer so that they don't have to have SDDC running all the time. It saves a significant amount of cost. And this is one of the advantages of having, you know, deploying in the cloud as well. And also, yeah, that's the advantage.
Yeah, and I guess also from an operational perspective, one of the first thing, of course, that could be part of your process is as soon as I've detected some kind of breach, spin up an SDDC as quick as I can and then, you know, maybe I need to recover to it. And if I don't, then at least, you know, I had it up and running just in case. So that could,
Yeah. And also you could do testing very easily. Like, for example, yeah, there are two kinds of testing. One is disaster recovery testing. Like, you know, sometimes you got to do dry runs. And then same thing for ransomware recovery. So we have like those features as well, where you can push a button and you can do some testing once in a while, just to get comfortable with the process and see if it works for you. So and then in that case as well, we can bring up the SDDC and bring it down automatically when it's kind of testing is done. So it just gives you confidence. So we're trying to aim for fast recovery and confident recovery. And it's not a toy. It's actually like, you know, you don't have to like really think it's going to work, not work. So we're trying to make it just be predictable and have confidence in it.
Yeah, one of the things you mentioned earlier, I want to, you know, delve a bit deeper in is the ability to do a failback, but in a more efficient way. I actually saw that in a demo. And I found that very interesting, especially if you look at things like egress cost. I'm pretty sure that a lot of customers would be very interested in that functionality.
So egress cost is not the main challenge because, see, you're not failing back every day. It's only once in a while. Like it's a that cost is not, it's a one-time cost. It is not the biggest cost. The main challenge is that if you bring a lot of data, like if you want to, let's say you fail over to a backup system and you want to bring it back, right? No matter what solution it is. If you have to bring back all the data, it takes time. And it takes like, you know, if you have 300 terabytes or something like that. You know how long it takes to bring all the data back to your on-prem? It takes a long time to bring all the data back. So it eats up into your recovery time. So what we have done is that because we have local snapshots, a series of local snapshots, we have a series of cloud snapshots. When we are done recovering, we can negotiate between these two and see which is the closest snapshot we are together, like which is the one we're recovering to. Find the one which is closest to the recovery point and then just transfer the delta. So instead of transferring 300 terabytes, you may be transferring 3 terabytes. Big difference in the time taken to recovery. That we can do because we understand the local snapshots, we understand the remote snapshots because we are one team and one product, right? So we can do this much more efficiently. So that's a kind of optimizations we are doing for the cyber secure storage, because that ultimately what we want to focus on is how can we get recovery to be fast. And this is one of the techniques we're doing to also recover fast. Otherwise, if you just dump data in S3, you know, it'll take, like, I don't know, you better off just paying money to just because it'll take you like days to recover from that. So egress cost is one thing, but that is not the main, it's a one-time thing. The main thing is the time taken to get back. And you're nervous waiting for this data to transfer. Like, how long are you going to wait? People are watching, like people, everything is down. So we try to optimize for that situation.
Of course, one of the other things that is really important when it comes to recovery is, first of all, selecting the right snapshot that you would want to test or maybe cleanse or whatever. Now, in the first episode where we had the discussion in episode 2, you've already briefly alluded to how it works, but it's probably good for those who haven't listened to it to explain what kind of mechanisms we have available in the platform that allows you to pick that snapshot a bit smarter.
So you have a set of backups. So how do we know that which backups are good, bad? When did ransomware attack you? Like how do you know all these things, right? This set of things, for example, but it's very heuristics based. It's not a guaranteed, right? So we have this mechanism in the VCDR with Intelligent Assistant workflows, is that there's a graphical interface to kind of show you like how the data has changed in the backup, like across this time. And suddenly you'll see that there's spikes in the how the data, like for example, a few things like metrics like we have is entropy. Entropy is the how the data looks like. What is the inside? What's the content of the data? So there's some signature of the content of the data. If it changes dramatically from this backup to this backup, clearly there's encryption going on and the content has changed so much that it looks dramatically different. And also the amount of data has changed because suddenly if you encrypt everything, the amount of data also is increasing, how much you backup, right? Because a lot of data has changed. So all those things kind of help you, give you a window into like, okay, this region, like maybe this couple of days or 1 week of is space of where the snapshots could be good, could be bad. Not sure exactly which one it is, but here's the range of snapshots you could look at. But see, it's a range. Now, the problem is that if you can't bring up these workloads, snapshots immediately and do some testing and see if it's good or bad, you're, again, going back to the same problem of how long does it take. So with our innovations are all about helping customers and the kind of, again, this is where I think customers and input is needed. We can't automatically kind of just say this is it. But we are suggesting here's the window. Here's the kind of window of snapshots. Pick them, and then you can, and then the tool will actually automatically bring up these workloads, kind of see if they're good quickly, and then kind of clean them as we go along. So that is the process we are trying to optimize for.
Now, you mentioned clean them as well. Now, I'm also guessing that when we restore things within VMware Cloud and AWS, it's also fully isolated.
Yes. So because we are in the cloud, we are able to bring up this SDDC on demand. It's a brand new SDDC, not infected anything, right? It's a freshly installed servers. And then we put firewall rules, NSX rules, so that it's quarantined. Because one of the things you don't want is this thing to escape and do stuff, right? So when we bring up the workloads, we first of all quarantine the entire SDDC itself. And there's a technical term for this. It's called Isolated Recovery Environment, IRE. That is the technical term for it. But I'm going to choose quarantine as a much more simpler English word for now. So, and then also when we bring up the VM, each VM also is isolated to some degree of different settings, the different levels of isolation, because you need to try different experiments, because sometimes you need more openness within across VMs, because then they do more interesting things. Then you can discover what they're doing. But even then, each VM is quarantined with different firewall rules with using NSX, so that nothing is really, it's all completely under control. Nothing escapes the SDDC itself. So that's important. Otherwise, you will reinfect your environment. So you need this automatically. So all of this is very complex steps. And so we fully automated this so that it's kind of built into the system itself to do all this quarantining, to bring up all these VMs in a quarantined way, and to kind of do some of these processes.
Yeah, the other thing that you mentioned was cleansing the virtual machine. Is that also fully automated?
So yeah, there are a couple of things. One is that we inject after the VMs are kind of brought up from the backups, we inject a few antivirus agents into it. One of them is Carbon Black. And so to analyze behavior, sometimes it takes a little time to analyze the behavior because, again, like I said before, they don't have signatures anymore. You have to see what they're doing. They latch onto some memory and they do things. So you got to watch that behavior. And also this Carbon Black also is a agent is also able to detect other kind of things. So not every ransomware is complicated. Some of them are just simple stuff. But it's able to detect all these things. It's also able to detect things you do not do to patch things up. There may be some vulnerabilities. It'll tell you all these things. And you have a chance to actually fix all those things. And also, for example, if you have a database, let's say, if you have a database in a Windows operating system, the Windows operating system may be all messed up, but the database may be pretty good shape. So we have these tools, we're going to just take out the database and copy it to another VM, or into a brand new VM, right? So those are some of the things. We are still a little manual, but that's what we mean by cleansing. So we make it easy. Like there's easy tools, easy process, easy like visually to like understand what's going on.
That sounds very easy. Now, one of the things I also was interested in understanding is in the last episode, we had Kalyan talking about vSAN Max. And at Explore, I saw vSAN Max mentioned in your deck as well. How does that actually fit into the bigger picture when it comes to the cybersecure storage?
So historically, VMware has, we have been having as a storage product is vSAN with the HCI model, hyperconverged model, which typically, the way it's depicted in the outside world is there's compute and storage together. But if you look at the big picture, what VMware always said was hyperconvergence is not so much a physical deployment model. It's about a model of management that storage and compute go together. It's a cloud. I mean, it's all together. But the industry has kind of, HCI kind of has meant hyperconverged infrastructure, which is compute and storage together. And as we went along, right, every data is growing in different dimensions and it's becoming more dynamic. Like if you look at some of the modern workloads, data comes and goes. So people want a more flexible architecture, a more flexible way to share the storage across multiple clusters. So then we took the architecture because the ESA helped us do some of these things. We have now a choice for customers to either do the hyperconverged model, which is compute and storage together, or deploy a storage-only clusters and have external storage, we call it disaggregated storage, and you can attach any compute to it. So then you can scale compute and storage independently of each other. So that gives the flexibility of the options. So even if you look at the deployment UI now, customer has a choice now. There are three choices. They can either say, okay, deploy this cluster as a HCI, hyperconverged cluster, or deploy compute-only clusters. A third one is deployed as a storage-only cluster called vSAN Max. And vSAN Max is a product, it's a marketing term, but that's what we are using as a way to say that this is a disaggregated option you have for your workloads. And this is like, think of it as a disaggregated storage, which is what most storage companies sell. But the difference is that it's a scalar architecture, just like vSAN was. All the goodies vSAN came with, it has the same properties as well in terms of scaling, performance scaling, and capacity scaling. It has all those nice features. But it's still vSAN, ESA. So we want whatever we do in terms of snapshot management, other workflows, it'll work no matter where it is. Okay, it may be some integration required a little bit here and there, but generally it's constructed to be no matter how the storage is deployed, to just have all the same feature sets.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that is also interesting to understand is that we've been talking about vSAN so far as the source, But will we also support other storage platforms as the source?
Yes, because we want to. I'll tell you why. For example, the cyber recovery vault, talked about that before, right? It wants to be in a central repository where you can get all the data, all the backups, and kind of cleanse and work on them to like actually make it a central repository for being a good source of immutable data, immutable backups, and also a good way to cleanse and recover the VMs in a fast way. So we're going to provide that. And as part of that option, people don't want to have multiple of these like different backups. Like, so what we want to also do is not only be the target for storing backups from multiple vSAN clusters across the globe, but also we would like to make it easy for people to actually have a third-party storage, if they have some, to also be able to back up those into the cyber recovery vault so that we can have one place to actually understand, clean, and recover fast. That is the goal to do it. That is why we have to consider that aspect of being able to also do backups from third-party storage products.
I like the flexibility that it provides from an infrastructure perspective. Now, we've been talking about virtual machines so far. I guess the other question then is if you're also planning on supporting cloud-native workloads, because as we know, a lot more customers are moving towards that space.
Yes. So there are some differences fundamentally between what a VM is and what a modern cloud-native workload is. At the high level, they're trying to achieve business objectives, right? But I think the technology, some of the pieces are a little different. So in a VM infrastructure place, VM is the kind of the unit of operation for the customers. So like I said before, we are constructing this higher level snapshot management workflows and able to help group application level logic into bringing logic into this. Because ultimately, what do customers want to do? Manage the applications and the data for that applications, not so much storage. The storage is like an artifact. So same thing, we're trying to bring the same concepts to modern cloud native workloads. The customers can choose, instead of VMs, they can choose their apps and say, hey, e-commerce app needs to be protected, right? And same constructs, same snapshot workflows, same backup workflows, same recovery workflows. So they have all the same things. So we're constructing this higher level logic so that it's applicable for VMs, for groups of VMs, for modern apps. Like, we're trying to help move the policies to a higher level where the customers can have the choice of protecting them. So we will discover what an app is, like just like we discover what a VM is, and kind of protect all the entities for that as part of the snapshots. Not only just the storage part of it, but if you look at in modern app, right, there's a lot of other artifacts it has, secrets, you know, some bunch of other things. We want to capture all of that stuff. That's what we mean by snapshot, and that'll be the snapshot. So it's the same constructs, similar constructs, but the foundation is built to also accommodate the cloud native way of thinking about some of the data protection aspects.
Now, last but not least, cybersecure storage is going into tech preview pretty soon, as far as I know. Can people still sign up for it? And if you can say or mention, when do you expect it to be generally available?
So we are doing a very selective beta with a very selective set of customers. It's not open to wide public. We're looking for a very small set of customers. And we have found many people are enthusiastic about it. So we found a bunch. It's not a broad beta program kind of thing. And as part of VMware, my lawyer said, I cannot say when we're going to ship it. So can't say.
That's the best answer we've had. Hey, before I let you go, first of all, thanks for a very interesting episode. And then lastly, any famous last word or anything else you would like to plug?
I think as a society, we need to focus on recovery. See, a lot of times we talk about backup products. I like to think about it as recovery products. That's one. Data is growing a lot by petabytes and leaps and bounds. How do we make it simple to manage all this data? And data has a life cycle. How do we help manage all the life cycle of data? And also, that's kind of where I think a lot of the focus is on, for at least for me and the team. How do we help customers have workflows which makes their life easy? They can go home at 5, don't have to think about storage every day. And if there's a problem, we are there to have predictable, safe kind of way of recovering, confident recovering. The way I think about it is that, ultimately backups are useless. Recovery is priceless. If you want to take away one line, that is what the line is.
And that's it. We've reached the end of another episode of the Unexplored Territory podcast. If I have to summarize today's episode, then my key takeaway would be that cybersecure storage will be the foundation that will enable customers to recover fast and efficiently in the future after ransomware attacks or when a disaster has occurred. Again, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and rate the podcast wherever possible. If you have any feedback, send us a message on Twitter on @honestportpod. Last but not least, I would like to thank Cesar already for a fantastic episode.